Kathy Geary. Welcome to Now and Then. It's great to be here in the studio today. I have been on a leave of absence for the past month in June, and I had an amazing experience this past June. I hope you've been having a good summer. It's great to be back live here in the studio at WJFF. I took the month of June off to do a performance with a local opera company, the Delaware Valley Opera. I was singing a role in an opera, an Italian opera by Giuseppe Verdi, based on the Shakespeare play Otello. And, you know, I put a lot of work into this program. And it was interesting for me to start to think about what music did I want to present to you on my return to live broadcasting here at WJFF. And, you know, it occurred to me that I've always been very, very involved in classical music and that type of repertoire, studying piano and performing. But also, I've been listening to the music of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the rock and roll that came out of the 60s, you know, since I was a young woman. That music to me is so alive. And so it occurred to me that when I first heard the use of orchestra in the rock and roll music of the 60s, I had a new understanding that perhaps there was a bridge between the passion that I felt for classical music and the incredible energy and vibrancy that came out of rock and roll, you know, when I was a young teenager. So today's program is about the use of orchestra in some of the rock and roll songs of the 60s. It opened a door for a type of creativity that has been carried through this entire second half of the 20th century. So how did that happen? I was studying classical piano and I'm playing Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. And then the Beatles are coming out, you know. Oh, my God. And it's rock and roll and it's guitars and it's astounding. And then I heard a song in 1965 from the Beatles, of all people. And this was a song featuring Paul McCartney as a solo musician by himself with none of the other Beatles playing, backed up by a string quartet. When I first heard the song Yesterday, which was released on the Beatles' 1965 Help album, I had a feeling of such a sense of enlightenment and discovery that, oh my God, these two musical worlds collide. It's one of the only songs that was ever recorded by the Beatles where the entire performance rests upon, you know, just one member of the band, and it was Paul McCartney. And when Paul and John met each other, they were 15 years old, they formed an unbreakable bond. They formed a partnership, and they agreed that every song that they would write together and perform together would be called a song that was a Lennon and McCartney composition. Well, Paul McCartney wrote the melody and the lyrics for Yesterday by himself. And as 40 years later, 40 years after that song was written and released, he's still struggling with the concept that it's his song. It's his song. And in the year 2000, Paul McCartney asked Yoko Ono if she would agree to change the songwriting credit for the song Yesterday. The Beatles released an anthology in the year 2000, which included a recording of Yesterday, and he wanted the songwriting credit to be changed to McCartney-Lennon instead of Lennon and McCartney. Well, Yoko Ono refused to do that. So according to the story, Paul McCartney dreamed the melody. He was living with his girlfriend, Jane Asher, in secrecy at their house on Wimpole Street in England. And he dreamed the melody. And he woke up and he went to the piano and played it so he wouldn't forget it. And he was so haunted by this melody, he worked on this song for a really long time. So this is like mid-1964. And he starts playing the song for everyone he knows because he's not sure that maybe he just is stealing another melody. So he goes around for a couple of months, and he says, quote, "For a couple of months, I went around to people in the music business and asked them whether they had ever heard it before. Eventually, it became like handing something into the police. I thought if no one claimed it after a few weeks, then I could have it." Well, sure enough, it was his song. And there was a lot of, turmoil going on about this song. Normally, John and Paul would share everything, but Paul pretty much kept this song close to himself. And the story goes that while they're filming the film Help, that there was a piano placed on one of the sound stages. And Richard Lester, who was directing the movie, got so annoyed because Paul McCartney, every time he'd have a break, he would go and sit at the piano and try to finish the song Yesterday. He got so annoyed at him that he said, you better finish that song or I'm going to take the piano away. And everybody in the band was tested by this song. George Harrison said, quote, at the time, he said, "Blimey, he's always talking about that song. You'd think he was Beethoven or somebody." So that was in 1964. He's working on the song, like I said, for a long time. And they could have released the song on a couple of albums, but there was a real disagreement about whether it was really a Beatles song or not. And George Martin was responsible for producing the Beatles, and especially during this time, he had a lot of power. And he wanted to have Paul McCartney play a solo acoustic guitar, and George Martin wrote a string quartet to back him up. Now, there's not a lot of information available about those decisions and those discussions, but this was decided between Paul McCartney and George Martin. So they finally recorded it, and they recorded it in Abbey Road Studios in June 14th of 1965. And they did it in two takes. We're going to hear both of those takes. The first take, McCartney is just playing his Epiphone Texan steel string acoustic guitar. And he performs two takes. And they decided that take two was the one that they would master into the finals, in the final version. And so take one, Paul talks at the top of the song. And so we'll listen to take one, which is just him with his acoustic guitar. And then we're going to hear the version that they released as the single from the Beatles' Yesterday and Today album with the string quartet that George Martin wrote. At the time, George Martin and Brian Epstein even had a conversation, and Brian was really confused because Martin said, you should release this as a solo Paul McCartney song. But Brian said, quote, "No, whatever we do, we are not splitting up the Beatles." One final bit of information about this song Yesterday is that, this issue of who wrote the song, right before John Lennon died in 1980, he talked about the song Yesterday. And here's what John had to say. He, quote, explained that he thought, "The lyrics did not resolve into any sense. They're good. But if you read the whole song, it doesn't say anything. You don't know what happened. She left, and he wishes it were yesterday. That much you get. But it doesn't really resolve. Beautiful." "It's a beautiful song. I never wished I'd written it. And I don't believe in yesterday. Life begins at 40, so they promise, and I believe it. What's going to come next?" So, powerful song, Paul McCartney's Yesterday. According to BMI, it was performed more than 7 million times in the 20th century. So we'll be listening to both of those takes of Yesterday. Now, it's about the orchestral influence, and I'm sorry if I'm going on a little bit of depth here, but it's deep for me. So, the Rolling Stones are in a creative competition, a creative loop with the Beatles. And 6 months later, Yesterday was released in June of 1965. In December of 1965, the Rolling Stones issue a song called As Tears Go By. And sure enough, it's pretty much an acoustic ballad with a string quartet in the background. And it's interesting because a man named Mike Leander did the string quartet arrangement. The Rolling Stones wrote the song, but they gave the ballad to Marianne Faithfull, and she released it in 1964, before Yesterday was released. Then the Beatles released Yesterday, and then the Stones did their recording 6 months later, and sure enough, there's a string quartet. So let's listen to those three songs. First, we're going to hear the very first take of Yesterday from Abbey Road. Then we'll hear the studio-released version from the Yesterday and Today album. And then we'll hear the Rolling Stones As Tears Go By. Paul McCartney.
It'll be an F for you. Yesterday. I'm in G, but it'll be an F. It goes E minor to A seventh to D minor. Ready? Okay, man. Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, there's a shadow hanging over me. I'm not half the man I used to be. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something wrong, now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something wrong, now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something wrong, now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something. Love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. It 'Tis the evening of the day. I sit and watch the children play. Smiling faces I can see, but not for me. I sit and watch as tears go by. My riches can't buy everything. I want to hear the children sing. All I hear is the sound of rain falling on the ground. I sit and watch as tears go by.
Orchestra, a string quartet, Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones. He wrote that song with Keith Richards, As Tears Go By, released in December of 1965. And right before that, we heard Paul McCartney's Lennon and McCartney composition, Yesterday. I'm Kathy Geary, and I'm here live in the studio today. You're listening to Now and Then, here on WJFF, Hydro-Powered Radio. So the idea of the orchestration, George Martin brought so much structure and musical orchestration and producing to the Beatles song that Paul McCartney and he decided, you know, to do the Yesterday with that string quartet. And the other Beatles didn't even want to release it as a solo, but as a single, but they did. In fact, the Beatles had 6 number one singles in a row at the time, in June of 1965. First was I Feel Fine, followed by 8 Days a Week, Ticket to Ride, Help, and We Can Work It Out, and then Yesterday. Such an unusual collaboration, and George Martin was at the heart of that. And I went into the record store sometime in 1966 or 1967, and I saw an album that I had never seen before, and I was like, oh my God, I have to buy this record. And it was an album with music by Paul McCartney, and it's the original soundtrack to a movie starring Hayley Mills and John Mills called The Family Way, which was released in January of 1967. So I was astounded. I thought, oh my God, Paul McCartney, but it wasn't the Beatles and he wasn't singing. This is an original soundtrack score that Paul McCartney wrote, and he did it with George Martin, of course. It was released under the name The George Martin Orchestra, The Family Way, and the composer was Paul McCartney. So it could be considered actually the first Beatles solo album. Some people think of George Harrison's Wonderwall soundtrack album in November 68 as the first solo album. But, you know, the idea that Paul and George Martin are working together on orchestration, I thought it'd be really interesting to listen to just a little bit of a track from this movie soundtrack by Paul McCartney. And then after that, we're going to be listening to another song. And when I was going in my mind and I'm trying to decide, well, what do I want to play to represent the orchestra in the music of the Beatles? Because there's so many examples, you know, the clarinet in When I'm 64. I knew I wanted to play Yesterday, and then I knew immediately that She's Leaving Home somehow was a companion piece to Yesterday. And I hadn't heard She's Leaving Home in quite a while, but it turns out that Yesterday and She's Leaving Home have something in common, very unusual. It's one of the few songs where the rest of the Beatles didn't play anything. The Beatles don't play any of the instruments in She's Leaving Home. It's an interesting backstory on this, on the She's Leaving Home, because, you know, George Martin had done all the orchestration and all of the arrangements for any extra instruments, session musicians that came in on the Beatles songs. George Martin's always did the arrangements. So the day before they decided that they were ready to record She's Leaving Home, Paul McCartney learned that George Martin was not available. And so, you know what? Paul McCartney goes outside of the Beatles' inner circle, and he contacts Mike Leander. Now, Mike Leander was the guy that had done the string quartet arrangement for the Rolling Stones as Tears Go By, which we just heard a little while ago. So it's one of the only times that a Beatles song was not arranged by George Martin, She's Leaving Home. The only other time that a Beatles arrangement was done by someone outside of George Martin and them was when Phil Spector did the orchestration for the Let It Be, you know, The Long and Winding Road. Paul McCartney didn't even know that Phil Spector was writing an orchestration, so we can't really count that. So Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was released in 1967. The Family Way was released in November of 66. We'll hear a short orchestral clip from that. Then we'll hear the She's Leaving Home from 1967 Sgt. Pepper's. And let me just read a quote from Paul McCartney about writing that song. He says, "John and I wrote She's Leaving Home together. It was my inspiration. We'd seen a story in the newspaper about a young girl who'd left home. I started to get the lyrics. She slips out and leaves a note, and then the parents wake up. It was rather poignant. I like it as a song, and when I showed it to John, he added the long, sustained notes, you know, she is leaving. And one of the nice things about the structure of the song is it stays on the same chords endlessly, a C chord. It really holds you. It was really a nice little trick, and I think it worked very well. While I was showing that to John, he was doing the Greek chorus, the parents' point of view. We gave her most of our lives. We gave her everything money could buy." Then there's the famous little line about a man from Motor Trade. People have since said, you know, that was Terry Doran. But it was just fiction, like the sea captain in the Yellow Submarine. They weren't real people. So She's Leaving Home, beautiful orchestration by Mike Leander. Another song from the Sgt. Pepper's album that had an important orchestral component. And I mean, we're talking violins, viola, cello, you know, double bass, you know, orchestral strings, horns. Another song from the Sgt. Pepper's album in 1967 was The Day in the Life. This was another composition where Paul and John wrote different sections of the song. But there was the decision to add these orchestral glissandos in a 23 bar section in the middle of the song, and that decision was made by, you know, Paul McCartney and George Martin. So they're pushing the orchestral thing together again. So there's this 23 bar bridge. They recorded the song in January of 67. There's this 23 bar bridge in between the two sections, and originally they didn't know what was going to go there. There's just this repeated piano chord, bing 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 bing, and Mel Evans, who's an engineering assistant, is counting the bars. One, two, you know, he's counting 23 bars. And then at the end of the 23 bars, after the piano's going dink, 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 an alarm clock goes off. And that's supposed to say, okay, that's the end of that section. And they knew that they were going to put something in there, but they didn't know what. So Paul McCartney suggests the idea of bringing in a full orchestra to fill the gap. And they were concerned that the classically trained musicians wouldn't be able to improvise. So George Martin actually writes a score for that section, for the orchestral improvisation. And here's what he has to say. We're about to hear A Day in the Life. You'll know the song when you hear it. What George Martin said about the score that he wrote for the orchestra is, he said, "What I did there was to write the lowest possible note for each of the instruments in the orchestra. At the end of the 23 bars, I wrote the highest note, near a chord of E major. Then I put a squiggly line through 24 bars with reference points to tell them roughly what note they should have reached during each bar. They all looked at me as though I were completely mad." McCartney said that the strings were able to keep it together during the 23 bars, but the trumpets were, quote, much wilder. You know, McCartney had originally wanted a 90-piece orchestra. So the orchestral bridge is repeated after the final verse. And the other thing, they filmed this recording, and the orchestra was asked to wear, for avant-garde effect, they were all asked to wear costumes while they played in this orchestral interlude. So they had on fake noses. The lead violinist performed wearing a gorilla paw, and the bassoon player had a balloon tied to the end of his instrument. At the end of A Day in a Life, there's this powerful final chord. Boom! Following that final orchestral crescendo, there's this huge final chord. And what happens is Lennon, McCartney, Ringo Starr, and Mal Evans, they've all got three different pianos, and Martin is on the harmonium, and they all play the E major chord. And then what they did is they brought the recording level up louder and louder for 40 seconds so that they would record the vibration of that chord. They only hit it once, and then they kept bringing the volume up and up and up for 40 seconds so that at the end of the recording, you can actually hear the sounds in the studio, the rustling papers, a squeaking chair. Originally, the Beatles had wanted to put a vocal chord at the end, and they recorded that, all four of them singing the chord, but they wanted something stronger. And there's this sense of the way that the tonality, it's like this inevitability with the final chord of A Day in the Life. So the powerful influence of orchestration in the early rock and roll music of the Beatles and how that looped into some of the Rolling Stones stuff. So we're going to start with November 1966, a little bit of George Martin and Paul McCartney's soundtrack for the Hayley Mill movies, The Family Way, followed by She's Leaving Home from Sgt. Pepper's with a string background, and then finally A Day in the Life from Sgt. Pepper's, The Beatles, Paul McCartney.
Thank you.
Sunday morning at 5 o'clock as the day begins. Silently closing her bedroom door, leaving the note that she hoped would say more. She goes downstairs to the kitchen, clutching her handkerchief. Quietly turning the back door key, stepping outside, she is free.
We gave her most of our lives,
is leaving,
sacrificed most of our lives. We gave her everything money could buy.
She's leaving home after living alone for so many years. Father snores as his wife gets into her dressing gown, picks up the letter that's lying there, standing alone at the top of the stairs. She breaks down and cries to her husband, "Daddy, our baby's gone. Why would she treat us so thoughtlessly? How could she do this to me?"
We never thought of ourselves,
is leaving.
Never a thought for ourselves. We struggled hard all our lives to get by.
She's leaving home after living alone for so many years. Friday morning at 9 o'clock, she is far away, waiting to keep the appointment she made, meeting a man from the motor trade.
What did we do that was wrong?
He's happy.
We didn't know it was wrong.
Fun
is the one thing that money can't buy.
Something inside that was always denied for so many years.
British army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away, but I just had to look, having read the
Day in the Life, Lennon and McCartney, The Beatles, 1967, Sgt. Pepper's, with an amazing orchestral glissando interlude, orchestrated, arranged, conducted, and produced by George Martin. Before that, we heard She's Leaving Home with a string arrangement by Mike Leander. And then right before that, we heard an excerpt from a soundtrack to a movie called The Family Way, composed by Sir Paul McCartney and produced, arranged, conducted by George Martin, called The Family Way. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF. Beautiful sunny, sunny day here at the end of June. Great to be back in the studio. Good to be here live, focusing on the influence of orchestra in rock and roll and how it seems like those two unimaginably separate types of musical genres can come together into a powerful, powerful statement. So the Beatles, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was 1967. And, you know, there's so much creativity going on. There's so much competition resulting in, artistic achievements. Okay, what am I getting at here? Okay, well, you know, John Lennon made this observation that, within just a couple of months, that sure enough, the Rolling Stones are going to copy the Beatles' innovations. And he said that when the Rolling Stones released You Can't Always Get What You Want on their Let It Bleed album in July of 1969, John Lennon said, you can't always get what you want is the Rolling Stones' counterpart to Hey Jude. So Mick Jagger said in 1969, quote, I liked the way that the Beatles did that with Hey Jude. The orchestra was not just to cover everything up. It was something extra. We may do something like that on our next album. So sure enough, it's really fascinating for me to hear what happens when the Rolling Stones incorporate a classical component in their song. So they bring in the London Bach Choir to open up the song, You Can't Always Get What You Want. They use them throughout the song and they bring it to its conclusion. Jimmy Miller produced the song at the time and he's playing drums instead of Charlie Watts. So You Can't Always Get What You Want. There was a review by a man named Richie Unterberger in the All Music Review, and he talks about the meaning of the lyrics and how it was about the end of the 60s and the overlong party. It was, quote, a snapshot of swinging London burning out. And that's a valid interpretation, but it should also be pointed out that there's also an uplifting and reassuring quality to the melody and the performance. This is particularly true of the key hook when we are reminded that we can't always get what we want, but we'll get what we need. So let's listen to the London Bach Choir with the Rolling Stones in 1969 from their Let It Bleed album, You Can't Always Get What You Want. And after that, please indulge me while I play one of my own compositions. In 1999, I recorded some music with a friend of mine, Ron English. He wrote the lyrics and I wrote the music. We released the album in the year 2000, and this track is called Holy Terror. And it was certainly a momentous experience for me. And when we recorded it, we pretty much recorded a lot of live recording. And the bass player, Don Martin, had an amazing groove going on. And we just faded it out, and it lasted for a very long time. And I said, I want to imitate what the Stones did, and I want to write a choral piece. I want to have a choir come in and sing on the end of this song. And I was so inspired by You Can't Always Get What You Want. So we'll listen to the Rolling Stones, and then we'll listen to one of my own compositions. I'm Kathy Geary. The song is called Holy Terror with Don Martin on bass and Adrian Harpham on drums. And some of my best friends, including Robert Wagner, singing in the choir at the end of the song. Let's start with the Rolling Stones.
Thank you. ocean, a glass of wine in her hand. I knew she was gonna meet her connection. At her feet was a footloose man. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, you might find. Singing words gonna vent our frustration. If we don't, we're gonna blow a 50-amp fuse. Sing it to me. Just my fun. Time.
second chances, I have second sight. 2,000 years.
That song was called Holy Terror. I wrote that song and recorded it, released it in the year 2000, Revelations Book 2. And I hope you enjoyed the choir segment at the end. I was so inspired by the Rolling Stones from their Let It Bleed album, You Can't Always Get What You Want. I'm Kathy Geary, and you've been listening to Now and Then here on WJFF, award-winning hydro-powered radio. The use of the orchestra in rock and roll. You know, this is hardly a definitive exploration. These are just some of the major pieces that stuck out in my mind. You know, we'd have to listen to Bridge Over Troubled Water by Simon and Garfunkel and some of the production that Roy Halley did. Also Frank Zappa, very orchestrally oriented, wrote out the parts, the scores, arranged and conducted all of his own recordings. Van Morrison's album in the mid-70s, The Vedan Fleece, with amazing string arrangements. The music of Nick Drake, another British musician. His Riverman from Five Leaves Left. There's a lot to explore when you think about the use of orchestra. And on another note, Paul McCartney continued to explore the classical musical vein. You know, we heard that soundtrack from 1966. Well, he just completed a ballet for the New York City Ballet called Ocean's Kingdom. It's a four-movement symphony. He wrote the libretto, and they choreographed it and premiered it in New York City. So he's still producing classically oriented rock music. I'm Kathy Geary, and you've been listening to Now and Then. I hope you enjoyed today's program. Thank you so much for listening.